Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on Genesis Fleet Triumphant, which is the third and final book of the Genesis Fleet series, which is the fourth kind of group of books in the Lost Fleet saga. Started with Lost Fleet, went to Beyond the Frontier and Lost Stars that kind of interwove. So there was six in the first set, five in Beyond the Frontier, four in Lost Fleet, three in Genesis Fleet. The only other part of this whole saga that I'm aware of is a five-issue miniseries the Titan did, which is what had got me aware of the whole franchise, called Corsair, which we may get to at some point. But this picks up really shortly after the previous book left off. I mean, no real time had elapsed that I can think of.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because 2 years, 3 years had elapsed between the first and second book. So for this to pick up right on the heels, I wasn't really expecting that.
Neither was I.
And it made sense for the story they were trying to tell here, but it made me feel that this trilogy of books was paced differently than the others.
This trilogy of books was appropriately named Genesis Fleet.
Mm-hmm.
It was all about the First Fleet. It wasn't actually about the forming and foundation of the Alliance. It was about the First Fleet.
I guess by the end of this book, we have a fleet put together. It's just that we really... Most of this bounces between defending the Glen Lyon system while Nakamura is going off and getting allies and stuff over in the Eerie star system.
Well, and the fleet that we assemble, that Nakamura assembles, leaves Glen Lyon after the victory and does, for lack of a better term, a victory lap.
And a cleanup sweep.
Gets rid of the pirates that have been messing with trade.
But to me, that's really the main adventure of the fleet. Their stuff here in Glen Lyon was shown. The rest of all of that, which is the first real fleet thing, we're told about, we don't see.
Yes. Which I was kind of disappointed in, given this was Genesis Fleet. Though, I mean, okay, parse the word Genesis. I mean, I was thinking it of formation of the First, creation of the First.
Yeah, I guess for me, Fleet is a little grandiose since most of the battles we have single ships. And again, I'm just parsing the title here. It's not a knock on the book.
Right, but, I mean, we do have two ships from Eerie, one ship from Benton,
and again,
freighter from Odawa.
That's at the end of the book.
Right, it is.
Most of the book, we've just got Gary on the one ship, and actually most of the book is actually defending the base.
Well, and yeah. And Gary has a line. I just saw it. I wonder how many commanders in similar circumstances throughout history have staged a hopeless attack simply to show they were doing something, because it would make them look better, even though what they were doing would make things worse.
Yes. There was a lot of point where he was forced into inaction because it was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything he did in terms of attacking the enemy or action would actually have made it worse for the people defending the orbital facility, or would have put his ship physically in a worse position, either because to fire on the other ship, he would have had to get within firing range.
Yes, he could have risked his entire ship for negligible gain.
Yeah.
So he did the right thing. The government knew he was doing the right thing, but they also, all of them knew it wasn't going to go over well.
Yeah.
He was seen as having lost his nerve.
Yeah.
Now, did you catch in the first chapter the reference to John Carter of Mars?
Yes.
I thought that was a nice thing, because one of the characters is from Mars here.
Yeah.
And she's kind of referencing it. It was not at all like the books.
Yes. Well, and she acknowledges that when she read the Barsoom series.
Mm-hmm.
And then she found out Barsoom was supposed to be Mars.
Yeah. Just kind of, what were they thinking?
Yeah.
We got a ton of star systems referenced, a ton of characters, of course.
Yes.
And as I was going through on my Kindle, I was highlighting all those just to kind of come back. And the nice thing is I can highlight in different colors.
Yes.
So I was highlighting in yellow the different star systems, because at some point I do kind of want to map out known space in this universe. Red for the various characters. Sometimes we get a name, sometimes we get a full title and of this, that, and the other organization or whatnot.
Yeah. Well, and this is the book that on Kosaka was making the Integrated Information Service.
Yes.
Which was fascinating.
Well, it seemed like it was starting to build up the equivalent of the ISS, Internal Security Service, or whatever that the Syndic worlds have, but it was kind of put to a stop here.
Yes, yes.
So you can see not everybody landed on the planet that maybe they should have.
Yeah. Well, and it was a very interesting discussion of if we are all basically pressed to have a consensus of one truth that is then disseminated, how do the people receiving that one truth know of any other information or know whether or not they have actually been given the truth?
To me, that's what I perceive as a fallacy of kind of corporate culture. Once the decision's been made, you need to get on board with it and support it, even if you know it is wrong. Now, maybe you're wrong about it being wrong, but maybe you're right. But if everyone's just playing yes, man,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't do anybody any good.
Yeah. Well, and the way Ochoa goes and proves to the president, the leader...
The prime minister, whatever it was, yeah.
The leader of Kosaka, that things are happening in a manner that isn't what he was told.
Or would want.
Yes. Is that she makes an appointment on his personal calendar with him, directly with his assistant, so only the three of them know. And when she shows up, the leader of the IIS shows up 10, 20 minutes before the meeting and says she was aware there was a meeting her participation would be good to have in.
Well, and the meeting had only been set up 30 minutes in advance. So for that person to have gotten over that quickly,
yeah,
meaning they needed to have spied pretty fast on this.
Yeah. As they get into the meeting, and the president's saying, but I was assured my personal calendar wouldn't be shared with anyone. Oh, well, you know, we have to monitor things.
How else can we keep you safe?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I thought that was well played.
Well, and Ochoa was taking the writing advice of show, don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
What good does it do to tell somebody you fear something when you can show them it's happening?
Yes, when you can prove with a very personal and relevant example to the person.
Yes.
Well, and with the you can't trust what they say, there was again the humanitarian missions.
Yes, yes.
Which, if you go back to the Syndic versus Alliance worlds, humanitarian was kind of a curse word because it had been so misused.
Yeah.
In Syndic space.
Yes.
I did think there was one really good line, and I'm pretty sure it was Melly who had it, of I'm better at listening to advice than I am to listening to orders.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, there are certain ways to tell certain people things that'll go over better than others.
Yes.
And there were a couple of times where it's like, who's reporting to who here? Had to be clarified, both with Ochoa, with Darcy and some of the people who were sent to help her, who were supposed to be under her command, but didn't really think so.
Yes. Well, and to that end, the people who thought that they didn't need to be under her command, shouldn't be under her command, even though they'd never faced battle before.
Well, and when the heavy gun got... they're trying to defend their orbital station, and have gotten set up to be in pretty good shape for that. And she's saying, don't get out until I say so.
Yeah, the Force Recon guys.
And the Force Recon guys take their heavy stuff out there. It's like, oh, we got a shot. And she's like, get the hell back. And they wind up just getting obliterated by the particle beam or whatever.
Yeah.
And she's like, at which point everybody else starts realizing she does know what she's talking about.
Yeah.
So there were some lessons some people could have learned the easier way mm-hmm. than they did.
Well, and there are a lot of times in this book when Nakamura is negotiating on behalf of Glenn Lyon mm-hmm. as well as Kosatka, because Lee Carmagan gave him that power, that proxy, if you will.
That was the part where I felt things were a little left off, because she was heading to Earth to buy ships.
Yeah.
And did we ever get closure on that?
No, we didn't. This
felt like another book or two needed to be in here somehow.
Well, and at the end of the book, I really felt like it was leaving two separate springboards to other books and series. Because the epilogue felt like it was springboarding a separate direction from the final chapter.
Yeah, I agree with that, because I think the Genesis fleet crammed in some stuff here at the end of them cleaning up the trade routes and not addressing getting the ships from Earth. That could have possibly been another book right there.
Mm-hmm.
But then with Blackjack Gary and Tanya Desjani having essentially read these books as a historical thing, and it made me wonder, well, who was narrating? It was unclear what they read versus what we read.
They read something Mellie Darcy had written.
Yeah.
That was too honest and scandalous to be published.
But clearly not exactly what we've read.
Right, exactly.
But that seemed to set the stage back towards more that era type stuff, and that's 100,
at
200
least 100
years,
in the future.
Guaranteed 100, because of just how long Blackjack was on ice.
Yeah.
But even then, the fleet had been, and the alliance had been long established, whereas here it's informal, so you got to figure almost another 100 years.
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure what the next book the author is planning on doing is in this series, if any. I'm assuming, because again, the springboards, he's got a successful series, why not continue with it?
Well, at this point, he's given us the fleet. He needs to give us the alliance. And in here, he had fascinating things like when the fleet first arrives in Glen Lyon's base, and the president down Glen Lyon tells Rob Gary, you can talk to them. Why don't you tell them, you and the ship from Kosatka will do one thing, the rest of the alliance ships can do something else. And he says, do you realize you just asked me to tell these allied ships, we want to divide your forces.
Yep. You've come together as one unit. We want to split you in half.
Yeah.
I thought that was well done.
Yeah. And there were other moments like that. And when Nakamura kept negotiating on behalf of both Kosatka and Glen Lyon and saying, look, nobody's asked me to hand that responsibility back. Nobody's relieved me of that responsibility, so I'm not going to set aside the best interest of Glen Lyon simply because they don't have a seat for themselves at the table.
Well, and the power of those two systems literally speaking with one voice.
Yeah, and I think Lee Carmagan realized that when she entrusted Locken. Mm-hmm. And she knew that she was entrusting someone that both Rob Gary and Mellie Darcy trusted.
Yes. Well, and there was a lot of places where it's like, I don't know this person, but this person I know and trust says I can trust them good enough for me.
Yeah, there was definitely a 6 degrees aspect.
Well, and it would be interesting to, with this set of books in particular, map out the relationships of the characters.
Yeah. Well, and there was an interesting thing on Ire where it was almost a loyalty test.
Yes.
Are you sure you want to stand by my daughter? Because I don't want my daughter to have anything to do with this. And when they said, look, we came together as allies and friends, and we walked in here together, and we're not turning our back on one among us simply because you asked us to.
Would you want allies who would turn on people that quickly?
Yeah. So this book had a lot of really strong and powerful messages in it.
It did. I would say overall it was well written.
But when I started reading it, and it was fairly early on, I asked you when it was written.
And it was May 2019.
Yeah, and it felt like it was doing some of the modern and current social commentary in terms of the, we should have only one organization establishing what the truth is.
Yeah. Do you have the concept of fake news particularly parading around as the truth?
Yeah.
I did find one or two of the common lines we've seen in these novels of, he let out a breath he hadn't realized he was holding. So there's a couple of writing tics.
You know, it's funny, because the more you point that out, the more I actually notice it.
Well, it's one that I think has been in almost every one of the novels, but only, like, the once.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what I would use in place of that. I get what he's going for. The guy, the character is tense and,
yeah,
you know, but it's one of those things, particularly reading so many books by a single author, you start to pick up certain tics.
Yes.
I didn't notice that when we did the Time Wars books by Simon Hawke.
Mm. Well, it's funny because when I was doing a lot of writing, somebody asked me what I was reading while I wrote. And I said, you know, that's the thing. I have to be careful. Because yes. If you're reading a bad writer or someone who their writing gives you bad habits, when your writing goes downhill.
Well, it can become almost an echo chamber of sorts.
Yes.
Yeah. I have seen cases where I have had discussions with people and they're vehemently opposed to what I'm saying or whatever. But then after just a little bit of time, suddenly their ideas, and this is what they're very much in favor of.
Well, the flip side, though, back in the 90s, I had a boss who called me one day and said, apparently I've been talking to you too much.
Picked up certain verbal tics or something.
I had adopted the phrase no worries from some of my coworkers, and he had popped out with no worries in the middle of a board meeting.
Oh, that's funny.
And everybody just looked at him like, where did no worries come from?
Yeah. Well, there are certain signature phrases or whatever that, yeah, you can almost maybe not see the direct chain of events, but you got to wonder, it's like, they weren't using that before, and I've used it a few times. I wonder where they got that.
Yeah, but he said, you know, once he got called on it, he realized I was the only person he was talking to.
Mm-hmm.
That used it. He's like, you gotta stop doing that around me.
Yeah, that's why I find he held his breath sort of a thing. It's not a knock on the writer at any stretch, but it's one where I recognize the phrasing.
Yeah. Well, and we've talked occasionally about the fact that from a young age, we were taught certain, I don't want to say rules of writing, but certain guidelines to follow and be aware of, that not necessarily everyone was taught because both our parents did work as editors. And it was things like don't repeat phrases within close proximity.
Well, and I think that's the difference between writing and podcasting. Because in writing, you've got the time to kind of hone your craft, your sentence structure, etc.
Yes.
For a book, to use, again, that same, I don't know how many, 12 words or whatever maybe? Sentence and stuff throughout the books, a good editor might have caught that and said, hey, you know, change it up just a little.
Yeah.
When you're doing it on a podcast, I know I've got verbal tics. I'm certain every listener right now is saying, uh-huh, and here's four of them.
Yeah.
You know, oh, it's interesting, or it's a solid story, whatever. There's certain things, because when you're speaking extemporaneously off the cuff, as we do on these episodes, because usually we're doing a TV show or a movie episode or a book episode. We've just finished. We're still internalizing the stuff and we're working through it as we discuss it.
Yes.
So I tend to be a lot more loose on what I expect out of people out of a podcast versus this is the one book the guy did in 6 months, 9 months, whatever.
Yeah. Well, and if you go back to the oral history with things like Homer.
Yes.
They have those phrases that kind of bought them time, but also they knew how it fit into the iambic pentameter.
Or you go back to the Claremont era of the X-Men, where the Wolverine's the best he is at what he does. Storm doesn't like tight places. She's claustrophobic. The accident as a kid impacted Cyclops' control of his eye blast.
Yeah, but suddenly that reminds me that Tahiti's a magic place.
Exactly. There's certain phrases that almost take on a life of their own.
Yes.
And again, this reusing of the holding the breath or whatever, it's not a bad thing.
Well, but I found myself marking how people signed off transmissions.
I can see that. I didn't do that, but with how big of a deal that was in terms of particularly the original Lost Fleet books, and as Gary was working through it, as to a degree, Dracon and Iceni were working through those sorts of issues.
Yeah.
You know, of what message are we sending? How do we want to sign off and punctuate our message?
Yeah. I mean, like, one ended, just as our ancestors stood together in the past, so we stand together now.
Mm-hmm.
Sori out. And I mean, we still haven't made it to for our ancestors or for the people.
No, but you can see that trajectory happening.
Exactly.
And that's kind of what I like about this series of these three novels, is you can see how it's heading in those directions. It's not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, it's veering off, it's course correcting.
Yeah.
But I was expecting in these novels to have gotten somewhere different than we did.
Yeah.
Although we got where I kind of thought we would.
Well, I mean, in terms of the fleet, it felt rushed at the end, but we got where I thought we were going. I guess I wanted more from the Alliance.
The more I think about it, is I don't know that the story we would need to get the Alliance is as much as in this author's wheelhouse as what we needed to get the fleet.
Mm.
He did fine with Lachlan in those discussions, but that kind of negotiation, yeah, that kind of politics.
Well, and interestingly enough, the way he managed to get the plans to come together was basically, let's make a loose agreement not to stab each other in the back right now, and we'll define the actual terminology later.
I'm not going to say that it's out of this author's ability to do the kind of politics story that I think we're kind of wanting for the formation of the Alliance, but it could behoove him to partner with somebody who's stronger at that.
Yeah.
Because I think so much of these novels is cutting between the fleet battle or the marine battle with plot around it,
mm-hmm,
that getting the... Oh, you kind of got some of the political battle, I guess, in the Lost Stars stuff.
Some, yeah.
But even that had Drakon leading his forces in combat and such.
Yeah.
So, I was hoping for a more solid formation of the Alliance in an actual... We now have the kickoff of the fleet or whatever. Almost where the Enterprise TV show got to at one point when Archer was taken to... By the guy from the future to the past to the formation... Actually, I guess in his future, to the formation of the United Planets and Starfleet.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess it was in his future. Getting to that touchstone, that final signature kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And it's not that I totally expected that, but I wasn't sure where this set of books was originally going to start in terms of the Alliance and the fleet and where it was going to end, and it didn't fit where I thought it might.
But I guess my thing is, I'm not positive the fleet is remaining in formation at the end of the book.
Gary gets assigned to a position to make that happen, as does Melly.
True.
But that's also what leaves me as this is the precursor,
yeah,
to the fleet.
Yeah.
And it's not a knock. It's just expectations set by the title,
yeah,
are one thing versus what we got. And again, kind of glossing over the cleaning up the trades routes.
Yeah. Well, and in terms of the title of the individual book, Triumphant, we knocked Apulu, Skatha, and Turin back out of Glen Lyon. And I guess it's Apulu that we're sending a freighter to.
Mm-hmm.
And Apulu is going to have people fighting from within.
Apulu was going to have its government overthrown by the mercenaries that had come to attack Glen Lyon because it didn't go well and they were turned on.
Well, and the mercenaries had realized they had been brought to Apulu under false pretense.
Yes.
And their families were back there.
But again, setting that thread up and not dealing with it in another novel felt odd to me.
So I guess really we had three springboards.
I would say...
Because really, just like Lost Stars, did Syndic Space on its own, Apulu could be on its own.
There's a plot thread very loose with the Apulu stuff. There's the plot thread in terms of the epilogue kicking off, continuing where Beyond the Stars and Lost Fleet and stuff, or
Lost Stars.
Lost Stars left off. I was thinking more the Lost Fleet than the Lost Stars.
Oh, okay.
I think on the Lost Stars, we still have the daughter,
yes,
to deal with. So this universe has easily four or five major plot lines to continue with. Easily.
Well, by doing Genesis Fleet, not only have we left the option to create the Alliance, but the author has the option to go create the Syndicate.
Absolutely. I also think there's the potential story of the start of the war.
Yes.
But I do think he's got dangling threads with the various aliens, with, again, Drakon's daughter, and things of that sort.
Well, and to that end, we totally dropped the ship that was coming in with nothing announced of identity and then bombarding plants.
I agree, and I think that was setting up the enigmas, but we know that because of reading other books, not because of this.
Yeah.
This is where it felt like the first novel was almost a prequel to these two, and that there was at least another novel in this bunch, and maybe an epilogue that really formed the alliance.
Yeah.
So doing this as a three-book series, or two-book and one-book three-book series, didn't work for me as well. But I think part of it is, for the other series of novels, they kept picking up on the heels of the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And even between The Lost Fleet and the Beyond the Frontier, there wasn't much of a time lag there.
Yeah.
Almost an intermission of the story, if you will. But within each of those, Lost Fleet, Beyond the Frontier, and Lost Stars, those three groups of novels, one stops, the other picks up. It stops, the other picks up.
Yeah.
So to have that gap between the first and second here, and then to leave a lot of loose ends at the end of this, and then jump 200 years-ish forward, felt weird.
Yeah.
Not wrong, not bad, but I think the structure of this book is different from where we started with the first Lost Fleet book, where we never leave Gary's side, Blackjack Gary's, to here we're bouncing between multiple threads that eventually tie together and such.
Yeah.
So there's enough in common. If you like any one of them, you'll like all of them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also certain things, if you get tired of the one Blackjack Gary character, you're going to get bored over there. Here, if you like one, maybe you like Millie, maybe you like Numero, whatever. When do we get back to them?
Yeah. Well, here you even get to have a little ninja answer a comm call.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny. I had hoped to have a jump forward in time to see that character a little older.
Yes.
A couple of various other things I highlighted. There was a talk around Chapter 6 of what are their children, their children's children, you know, would they praise their ancestors, would they not? That kind of, again, mm-hmm. building up that ancestor worship stuff. And a lot of, we're laying the foundation for what's going to come, and will we be proud of that down the line?
Yeah.
There's a bigger aspect of legacy here,
mm-hmm.
because it's at the beginning of the story versus Blackjack Gary's time, where you're paying the price of a not-so-good legacy.
Well, but the other thing with the Blackjack stories is people are used to living just long enough to die in battle.
Well, it's funny because, yeah, you've got people that are dying at a young age, so being an elder statesman is kind of unthought of, even though we have a lot of really older captains, which I could never wrap my mind around. Whereas here, a lot of people are very concerned about the legacy they leave, the precedent they set,
mm-hmm.
and seeing that kind of change in mindset
yeah.
really underscored. And I guess that's part of what made these books feel different, and
yeah.
in a good way, but in a different way.
These books can see a future. Those books can't see an end to the war.
Well, I can't always remember their past.
Yeah.
Going through my notes to see what else. Oh, in terms of your referring to present-day events, Chapter 11, there hasn't been any mention of a quid pro quo.
Yes.
And
yes.
It was in terms of, is this star system going to expect something back from what they've done? It was a fair use, and I don't think it was a political statement.
Yeah, it was just funny.
It was just, yeah, funny based on when we read it. The other thing I found hilarious, it was in Chapter 12, we're dealing with the Marines. They've been in their combat suits in an airless station for a while. And Melly looked at her Marines, who were hastily shoveling the last crumbs of food bars into their feed ports on their lower helmets and readying their weapons. Their feed ports. It's like, how does that look?
Yeah.
But it was one of those things, until we got to that, I hadn't even thought about it. They're in these battle armor, you know, suits or whatever, spacesuits, for days on end. And we've had that in past books. But the whole concept of, well, how do you eat?
Yeah.
Never occurred to me. So I appreciated the line in there to deal with that.
I did like Ford not wanting to be on point.
Ford not wanting to be on point. There was some good humor there. And then another one with, great, do it, I'll make you a lieutenant. Major, why would you tell me I'm doing a great job and threaten to punish me?
Yes.
Fine. Do it and stay a sergeant. So there was some good comedic moments.
Well, and then there was a point towards the end where somebody got promoted and then said, you know,
but I've got no corporals to order around.
Yes, yes. So Ford.
Ford, you're promoted. Now you've got a corporal to boss around.
Yes.
There was a almost gallows humor to it that I liked.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought we got some of the best Marine moments in this book.
Yeah.
Out of all of them. And let's see what else. Oh, with Ford. You know, and Ford, oh yeah, on point, got it. And what are you going to do if I get shot? Well, I'm going to feel really bad about it for maybe a second, then I'm going to have Mackenzie on point.
Yes.
Again, just some really good moments like that. I think this was one of the books where some of the dialogue really shined in a way that it was good in the other books, but here it was just a level better.
Yeah.
But I also think there was a certain amount of... There was so much going on that from a plot level, it's not that it was bad, but it was so much to hang on to.
Yes.
Maybe a little too much. And again, I was surprised in the epilogue at the mention of Blackjack, and actually not just the mention, but going to that point in time.
Yeah, so was I.
I wasn't upset with it, I wasn't bothered by it, but I hadn't expected it.
Well, and to let us know that Blackjack didn't know this was part of his past.
That kind of bothered me, because he's 100 years closer to it.
Yeah.
So, that having been lost or whatever, if it had been that Jane Gary had finally come to talk to him, I want to know more about my family.
Yeah.
And he had said, you know, have you read this? I haven't heard anything about this. Well, our family actually goes a little further back than you may realize.
Yeah.
You know, because maybe he'd heard it from his great-grandfather or something like that. Yeah. And if it had been in that direction, and just Johnny was, oh, I've got to read that.
Well, and if he'd been doing the part of why I don't like being called a hero is because I'm not the hero in the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, and doing it in a way that he is acknowledging his grandniece being heroic, his grandnephew having been heroic, his great-grandfather, whomever.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just doing what I can.
Yeah.
You know. But it makes me curious about kind of the family tree on some of these characters. I think there's a few things that could have been a little bit better on this in terms of the pacing and the plot threads. I enjoyed these books.
Oh, I was going to say, it does make me want another book.
Yes.
And I'll be watching to see what he comes out with next.
Well, I'm hoping he, I don't want to say doubles down on stuff, but almost rotates through some of the different things going on.
Mm.
Because I do think there's more to be had on The Lost Stars, certainly more to be had on the Beyond the Frontier era. And more to have both here and a little bit in between here and those stories.
Yeah.
I don't know where I want him to go next, but I want him to finish off on all the things he's kind of teased out there and left hanging.
Yeah, I agree.
Because he hasn't left it hanging with, oh my god, you ended here, but in a, there's more that I want to read.
Yes.
I enjoy the writing style, I enjoy the pacing, the tone, the humor, the...
The characters.
The characters, the plot... the plot aspect, the fleet maneuvers, the marine aspect, how it all weaves together.
Mm-hmm.
And he's building a more and more cohesive universe.
Yeah.
And this shined a light on it from a sufficiently different angle that really benefited it.
Yeah.
So I was pleased with this. I'm looking forward to it. Am I going to be able to talk you into reading the 5-issue miniseries?
We'll see.
So at some point, will I be able to talk you into reading the 5-issue series? Because I know you don't tend to read comics that often.
Yeah, I think I would.
Okay, I'll see what I can do about that, and we'll get to that when we get to that.
Okay.
As I recall, it's touching on his Blackjack Gary's grandnephew after he had been thought lost in the original set of books.
Interesting. Okay.
And it's nice to actually see the visuals on these ships, because we get the description of their like sea creatures and stuff like that, but actually see it is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
So anything else on this?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.